All right, you primitive screwheads, listen up.
Do you know what the problem is with you kids today? You guys think that all science fiction started in 1977 with Star Wars.
We put the picture's name on everything.
Oh, look, he's got a billion toys.
Baseballs, the t-shirt.
What about movies like Forbidden Planet, The Day the Earth Stood Still, Solaris? What about Logan's Run?
Baseball's the lunchbox.
I have to possess this comic.
Baseball's the breakfast cereal.
I have a Mego Isis action figure.
Almighty Isis.
Baseball's the coloring book.
I say we stay here and fight it out.
Shut up, kid. You weren't even born when Star Wars came out.
You fuckers think that just because a guy reads comics he can't start some shit? I'll fucking take all you want.
Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Open up your hate and the devil with the mate. Get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You mother, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. You fucker, get up, come on, get down with the sickness. Madness is the gift that has been given to me.
This is Geek Stuff, Episode 8.
We don't have one, do we?
No.
Well,
what's eight?
Jason
Takes Manhattan.
Yeah, no, we're not using that one.
That doesn't work.
We're saving that one. We're saving Geek Stuff Takes Manhattan for something else.
Has there been another movie series that gone to eight?
Yeah, probably Hellraiser, I'm sure, but I don't know.
Oh, maybe. What's James Bond 8?
Oh, God. I don't know.
Fantastic. Anything? James Bond? Eight?
Eight is great.
There you go.
Wow.
There's the eighth day of Christmas.
Somebody didn't take their meds.
Geek Stuff, Eight Maids Milking.
Ew. Ew.
Ew.
Maids are girls.
Geek Stuff, Thou Shalt Not Steal.
Is that the eighth commandment?
That would be the eighth commandment.
Let's see. How can we not? No.
No.
Nope.
No.
What else you got?
Geek Stuff. No cruel and unusual punishment.
Well, it is cruel and unusual punishment, so that's out.
Right. The eighth volume of the Sandman miniseries was World's End. Geek Stuff. World's End.
That's
not so bad.
I don't know. Where? How do you? I can't even spin that.
Bone was, the eighth volume of Bone was Treasure Hunters.
No, that doesn't really work here either.
Got
there's nothing.
Geek Stuff episode. Geek Stuff episode 8.
Treasure Hunters isn't too bad.
Well, hold on, wait, we got one more.
Well, what?
Geek Stuff episode 8, Sighted Die.
Wow.
Hey.
Eight Sighted Die.
We're going to be talking D&D later.
I don't know. But then that doesn't really encapsulate the other part of the show. Treasure Hunters, however.
That's not so bad.
Because
that kind of fits in. I can see where you're going. You don't even have to say it. I can see where you're going.
But
with all three segments.
But
kinda.
Maybe if I explain it, that the listeners will understand.
Nah.
Both of them.
Oh, okay. All right. I mean,
you and I.
No, don't forget Fantastic.
He doesn't listen.
No, he said he listened to Seven.
So. Get out.
Yeah, apparently.
Really?
Yeah. He commented on the sound quality. Anyway, why don't we go right into our new segment for tonight? We'll leave it as episode 8, to be determined.
I don't know. The treasure hunter thing it's sticking.
All right. So the official title of episode 8, Treasure Hunters. There you go. It's official.
The episode formerly known as episode 8.
Right. So now Fantastic has something to put on the site when he lists it.
Treasure Hunters.
There you go.
And now, of course, I'm going to have to tie this in when we're talking about stuff later. Great. That won't be too distracting.
No. We'll find a way.
What's in the news, boyo?
Well, the first thing that I have, it's a bit of reality TV, but it ties in directly with us because it's Stan Lee's reality TV show.
Have
you heard about this one yet?
No.
He is doing a reality TV show for one of them cable channels. I don't remember which one. Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, one of them. And it's...
Cartoon Network would seem fitting.
Sure. It's who wants to be a superhero or something along those lines? I have no idea what it's about yet. I haven't seen a lot on it other than that's what it is.
See, that's a mistake because, you know, if you're going to do a Stan Lee kind of reality show, shouldn't it be something about breaking into comics?
Well, no. The winner of the show is going to get to be a comic book character created by Stan Lee. So somehow these contestants are vying to be a superhero that Stan Lee will then turn into a comic book.
This sounds like it's going to end like a David Blaine magic trick. Wow. A whole lot of disappointment.
Actually, the disappointing part is...
when they're going to find a 40-year-old fat guy winner of this and how they're going to turn him into a superhero.
It's called Comic Book Guy.
Yeah, it's already been done. The Collector.
Exactly. No, the catchphrase.
Behold the Collector.
The catchphrase for the show, because every show has to have a catchphrase when you get thrown off, apparently is going to be turn in your spandex. So I'm just going to leave it there. Mull it over a little bit.
I can't believe that's what you're bringing to the table.
Oh, and I just found it. It's going to be on the Sci-Fi channel,
you know,
not
what?
Cartoon Network.
You know what?
What do you mean you just found that? Where did you find that?
In the articles. In the articles. He didn't highlight his articles this week.
No, my highlighter broke. It ran out of bright yellow ink.
Bastard.
Ass. Well, what do you have? What's your story?
No, wait. Slow down. Okay. Slow down. Because I think maybe you should turn in your spandex for that article.
Is Stan Lee
or put some on?
Is Stan Lee doing this against his own will?
Stan Lee has become a media whore in recent years. He'll do anything, it would seem.
Stan Lee is old.
There's
very
that too.
Old. He's like 83, and you know, I met him in San Diego, and there are just people leading him from place to place. So it surprises nobody. I mean, come on, I had two words for you. And they are, it's one word. Oh, I stink.
That's the two words. You stink.
I have one word for you.
Okay.
Stripperella.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I'm saying.
So the point being.
I liked Stripperella.
Of course you did.
Oh, I saw like an episode. I think it was probably the premiere episode and it didn't bring me in at all.
It was entertaining. Good animation. Good writing. Had the humor. Fake Pam Anderson. It was good.
Yeah.
I have the DVD, Mark, if you want to.
I mean, my personal opinion.
Illegally copy it.
My personal opinion is Stan Lee should stick to cameos in Marvel movies and Kevin Smith films. That's it. Leave it at that.
Right.
What do you got for us?
I just, there's no way to preface this. They're doing a Highlander comic book.
Oh. Do we just get it out of the way? Do we start with that old gag? There can be only one.
Oh, jeez. Only one what?
Awful There's Highlander
been,
comic.
You know what? In Highlander, there has been one of nothing. It's like there can be only one. There's been one of nothing. There's been many films. There's been many TV shows. There's been at least two. The animated series, lest we not forget.
Oh, I did forget.
There's been many Highlander. There's been more than one Highlander. There's been more than, I mean.
Have there been more? Is this the first comic book? Is this the first time it's making its way into the pages?
I think so.
So maybe this is it. Maybe this is the one. The Highlander comic book, The True Immortal.
Yeah, I don't believe it. The only thing that really confuses me about this book. Well, first of all, they claim that there's a new Highlander movie coming. That would be the first I heard of that, but I'm not saying it's not possible. I just haven't given a shit since 1986. Yeah. So, I mean, I wanted to. I really did.
Right.
When Highlander 2 came out, we all went opening night and cried. And
you do.
But seriously, the only thing that confuses me about this book right now is, well, first of all, it's Dynamite, which is a relatively new company. I think they are associated with Dynamic Forces, aren't they?
Oh, I don't know. They might be.
I don't know. But maybe they are. They're the guys. They're doing Red Sonja, right now, and I think they're doing Battlestar Galactica
based
on the new stuff coming up. The only thing that confuses me about this book, the only thing,
other than that someone greenlit it,
is Mike Oeming.
Is writing the book?
Is Mike Oeming is, I think, one of the writers.
Oh. But.
And he's definitely not doing the art.
But that would lead me to believe that there's potential for it to be good.
That's what I don't understand. It's so, it just seems like, I mean, he's been doing some of the Red Sonja stuff. I don't know.
Oh, see, that disappoints me because that makes me almost want to at least give it a look.
Almost.
Almost.
All right. Well, that's, I mean, they're going back, they're exploring, you know, some of the adventures of Connor McLeod where films don't cover and so on. I mean, I don't know. So everything old is new again.
Woo-hoo.
We couldn't do an original book. No, no.
No, of course not. Why would we do an original book?
Yeah, why?
I don't know.
Okay.
Well, as most of you have probably heard already, but I feel we should at least mention it, Marvel announced a bunch of new movies that are coming out, I guess, in the next couple years. Probably the biggest... Exactly. The biggest two would be... Thor and Iron Man. That's really annoying. All right, we'll skip that story. We'll go right to the next story.
What? Is the Marvel movie segment over?
It is. We're moving on.
Okay.
All right. So skipping the Marvel movie story, even though I'm interested to see what they're going to do with an Ant-Man story or an Ant-Man movie.
That would be fun.
I guess. Whole movie to support it, though?
Look. Let's waste our time when Wizard...
Right.
...has just come out with their mega movie issue of Wizard... Where there's they talk about all manner of movies that are on tap and coming and going and
hey, fantastic.
Whether Lindsay Lohan or Charisma Carpenter would make a better Wonder Woman. I mean, give me a fucking break.
Right.
I mean, do they really have to dedicate page space to this crap?
Hey, well, fantastic. You recognize the picture on the cover of that issue of Wizard?
Yeah, that's the fake picture of Spider-Man.
If that actually is... Okay, at this point in time now, I hope that picture is really just bad lighting. Because if Wizard had the balls to put a Photoshop on the cover of their magazine, that's just an atrocity.
See, now I'm starting to believe the black costume theory. I'm starting to believe it now.
Because Wizard put it on their cover?
Wizard wouldn't do that.
But that could be the bad lighting one. The one we're talking about here, folks, is if you remember a couple episodes back, I think probably when we first started talking about this whole black costume phenomenon, it's the one with Spider-Man crouched up against the wall of the building, and he's all kind of darkly lit, and it's all gloomy. And
his head's down, and he's snoring.
And it could be the black costume, or it could just be really dark outside.
It's like I said when we talked about it too. If they wanted to go with a black costume, fine. Actually, it was fantastic. Brought this up, but why do the same exact design just in black?
Right.
Why wouldn't you just do a better design or different design?
My favorite part about this is that their plan is working. They want geeks like you, and then semi geeks like me, to worry about that and to talk about that and on their little podcast talk about whether or not Spider-Man's costume is black or it's bad lighting.
So they
win.
So this is our little podcast. Is it fantastic? We're going to talk about it on our little podcast. Is that it?
Exactly. Yeah, no, I agree. Marvel, Sam Raimi, definitely getting a lot of press out of something that's really far away. Because we're talking probably June, July of 07 for the release of this movie. We're well in advance of a year before the release of this movie, and you know that there's going to be no official word for months to come. I mean, I'd be surprised if we heard something before Christmas time officially, whether or not that's the black costume. It's just going to be this internet fervor for the next 8 months or whatever to 6 months.
And let me say this. You should probably pick up this Wizard issue because, you know, you want to check out all the little tidbits of possible decent information that are contained on the pages within. I happen to love it. I think it's great because if nothing else, it kind of gives you a little something to think about with all these movies coming out and so on and so forth. So Wizard does a good job with Wizard Magazine and their Wizard Movie Magazine.
Right. What about?
No. Save it. And especially in the Wizard Mega Movie issue, which just came out today,
right.
You should go for just this article alone.
Yes.
Another
very pretty.
Huge Watchmen movie article with an absolutely fantastic piece of art by Mayhew on the pages. I thought it was Alex Ross. I mean, it was that level.
I didn't know Chewie could draw.
I don't believe it's Peter Mayhew.
No?
No. I already contacted Wizard, by the way, to find out... if anyone has purchased this piece yet.
Right.
Because if no one has, I would like to be included in the running. That's just like one of the finest pieces of Watchmen art I have ever seen. See that fantastic? It's fantastic. Fantastic.
Peter Mayhew is a good-looking guy, huh?
Oh, yeah. Peter Mayhew should be wearing a Wookiee mask. Oh, always.
Should he? Shallow boys?
He's a nice enough man.
Mm-hmm.
Just an unfortunate eyesore.
Didn't stop him from getting rich, did it?
Not at all.
Didn't stop him from being in, five of the greatest movies of all time, did it?
Sure. Well, and the Christmas special,
three.
Too. Didn't he do the Christmas special? What else he got over there?
I have, they also today released the nominations for the 2006 Eisner Awards.
Oh, that's right. I heard that was coming today.
Which are the awards for comic book greatness.
It's like the Oscars of the comic book world.
Kinda. Yeah, I guess. Kinda. And there's a couple I just want to hit really quick. Because there's like a gazillion categories and most of them
who cares?
A crap. But there's a few that I picked out as like a couple here. Best New Series, All-Star Superman by Grant Morrison and Frank Quietly topped that list, and I think that was probably, I think that one is probably very good. There's very good ones. I'm trying to pick a very good one in the category and a very bad one.
Okay.
Of course, the very bad one in that category would be Young Avengers.
Oh, right.
What the fuck?
I don't know who picks these things.
Like, give me a break. It makes no sense. The book makes no sense.
I haven't actually...
Avengers. But they're not them. It's not Steve Rogers as a teenager because that would be World War II. So, or before that. So who is the...
It's like the Gen X or the New Mutants of the X-Men books. Kinda. Right?
But it's worse than that because it's like... It's Iron Lad. I'm not even kidding.
Is he wearing like a kilt?
Iron, yeah. Well, it couldn't make it any worse. Iron Lad, Patriot.
Okay.
Okay.
Why not use Bucky?
The Hulkling. Yeah. The Hulkling.
Ew.
Yeah. Okay. You see what I'm saying? And of course, Asgardian.
Ew again. Yeah. Ew, the Hulkling.
That's what
Asgardian.
I'm talking about. Like, what the... Is it part of continuity? Did I just ask if it was part of Marvel continuity?
Does Marvel have continuity anymore?
In that sense, it makes perfect sense that it's a book coming from Marvel because it has no continuity
right.
to anything else.
Right.
Anyway, that's up for Best New Series. I don't know who the hell would vote for it. And if it wins, I might just ignore the Eisners altogether. I think they're at San Diego, if I'm not mistaken.
No, aren't the Eisners?
No. The winners will be announced Friday, July 21st at the San Diego Comic-Con.
Hmm.
Oh, that's what I'm doing in July. Best publication for a younger audience. There's a lot of good books here. Amelia Rules.
Ooh, I like that book.
Yeah, Spiral Bound, Clouds Above. The one I picked, believe it or not, hold on to your seats. Strap in. Was Franklin Richards, Son of a Genius.
I didn't
read
that.
From Marvel.
Wow.
Yeah, it was really, actually, it's really cute. It's really, you know what? He may look a little too much like Calvin.
Okay.
But it's still very funny. Yeah, it was very good.
I kind of like Amelia Rules in that category.
Best anthology.
Mm-hmm.
although I've read really none of the other ones, Flight Volume 2 from Image came out this year. That's just what it is. It's an anthology about flight.
Okay.
Things with flight thing. It's very good. I read the first one, and so I picked up the second one. It was very good. This one is actually huge, and I'm surprised actually that I'm not saving this for an actual discussion. Well, maybe it'll happen right now. Best Archival Collection Project Comic Strips.
Oh, well, that's got to be Calvin and Hobbes. It's got to be in there.
Oh, does it? Well, yes, Calvin and Hobbes is in there, but so is The Complete Peanuts.
Well, those were both this year. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, right.
And
right,
so
yeah.
It must have missed the cutoff date, but also something that just recently came out was Volume 1 of Dennis the Menace.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Which I also have. And I think this concept is great. They're doing an absolute complete edition of all of these comic strips. In the case of Peanuts, I mean, Peanuts was around for like what, 40 years?
So are these strips that are no longer coming out with new strips? We know Peanuts is done, right? Peanuts is in reruns, if you want to call it reruns. Calvin and Hobbes, I don't even think...
They call it Peanuts Classic.
Now. Right. Calvin and Hobbes, I don't even think you see anymore in the newspaper.
No, that's over. That had an absolute end.
But Dennis the Menace is still... I still see it in the paper, but are they new or are they just rehashes of...
Well, Hank Ketchum... I think Hank Ketchum's dead. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Maybe someone else... Either that, maybe someone else took it over, or maybe they're just... It's kind of like a Dennis the Menace classic.
Like a classic thing. It could be.
Because what else is really...
There are a lot that should be collected. There should be a complete Bloom County.
Oh, yeah, that's done. That's right. Bloom County's done.
I mean, there should be a complete... I don't know why on earth it stopped. I can't think of a better time for it to come back than now.
Well, the doesn't
complete Bloom County that includes Outland.
He's got what's the little penguin's name?
Opus?
Opus has got his own strip now.
Does he?
Yeah. Opus has got his own strip. I've seen it in I think the Star Ledger, at least. I get the Ledger every Sunday. I know he's in the
looking
Sunday.
For
yeah.
collected editions. Of
what them. Else is What else is complete? Prince Valiant's done, right? That's all rehashes. I don't think that's anything
well,
new.
Well, yeah, one would assume. There's collections of Boondocks.
Yeah, but that's still going.
If you talk about classic strips.
Sure. Well, that's why I went Prince Valiant. Is Spider-Man done? Or is Spider-Man still new?
What, the strips?
Yeah.
I think they're new.
Oh, are they?
Yeah. Stuff like, I mean, they've done them in the past, but this is like an absolute... digitally remastered,
yeah.
Hardbound library type.
Oh, what about the Far collection? Side?
Maybe. I don't know. That I mean, it seems like that's something that should be done in a couple of years. It doesn't seem classic enough. Like Peanuts.
Right.
You know what I mean? And Calvin Hobbes has been over for a long time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, or it seems that way anyway.
Well, Larson finished Far Side probably, what, 4 or 5 years ago, maybe. Around the same time. Actually, I think Farside finished before Calvin and Hobbes finished.
Did it?
I think so.
Well, it was still coming out with, whether they were reprints or not.
They were probably
reissues
for a while, yeah.
Maybe.
Books and collections, stuff like that.
Well, anyway, the Complete Peanuts, by the way, is fantastic. They're doing it by year.
Yeah.
So you have like 55, 56, 57, 58. It's 2 years.
Right.
Rather, per book. 55, 56. 57, 58, 59, 60. I think 60, 61 just came out. In fact, I think it's right behind me, but I'm not sure. But the point is that they are they're starting to do these.
Right.
And they're fantastic. It's a perfect book for a great library, illustrated library. And anyway, those two are nominated for Eisner Awards. I hope next year, I hope the Dennis the Menace book joins the ranking of nominees. I'm assuming maybe it missed the cut.
Yeah, it might have.
Because 55, 56, 57, 58 of Complete Peanuts is a while ago now.
Right.
There must have been a cutoff. A couple more Eisner Award categories before we move on. Best Archival Collection Project Comic Books. I chose Absolute Watchmen.
Okay.
Which I think is going to be the best one there. And I'm going to say no to the Fantastic Four Omnibus, which is just a massive collection of FF issues.
Sequential or?
I think sequential.
Story arcs, not the filler issues?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. I think it's just, maybe it's like 1 through
right.
50 or something. Anyway, I saw it. I didn't think it was that great. Best Writer. Warren Ellis.
Oh.
There's a lot of great in this character. Warren Ellis, Alan Moore, and Grant Morrison. I can't really pick a bad one there.
No.
Except Alan Heinberg, who writes Young Avengers.
Right.
And again, Young Avengers is nominated, and I don't understand it.
Back to the Hulkling.
Yeah. Oh. Asgardian.
Kind of hurts. I have
Iron Lad.
I have a pain in my stomach when I say Hulkling.
You see the Marvel Legends Young Avengers box that I picked up recently?
Yeah, I see it. My plan is to light it on fire as I leave the studio tonight.
Yeah, it's kind of really upsetting. It really is. Really is upsetting. Again, Marvel Legends, characters that are 8 months old.
Right.
Good. Works. Best writer / artist. So this would be somebody who's writing and drawing their own book. I picked Jeff Darrow for Shaolin Cowboy.
Okay.
Which is great. Chris Ware, who does Acme Novelty Library.
Right, right, right.
Did issue 16 of it anyway, is also very good. I don't know that there's a bad one necessarily in that category. A few more. Best writer artist humor. So this would be writer artist in funny books. I picked Eric Powell for The Goon.
Oh, nice.
Because that's a great book.
Sure.
And I actually picked him also in the best cover artist category. Best penciler / inker. John Cassaday for Astonishing X-Men is very good.
Tracer.
Gene Ha for Top 10 The 49ers is very good.
Tracer.
Frank Quietly. No, this is penciler inker. I think this is people who ink themselves. I'm not sure. Or maybe it's just one category, best penciler or inker. I'm not sure. Frank Quietly, All-Star Superman. He's very good also. Best painter, multimedia artist. Here's a guy we're getting on this show at some point. His name is Paul Guinan. He does. He's nominated for Heartbreakers Meet Boilerplate. You should Google Boilerplate and see what this guy does. This guy created this whole mythos about this robot that was created, steam robot that was created that fought in the Spanish-American War, and that it's really, you have to see how he's inserted this character into these old photographs, and it looks so real that, I mean, they're amazing. They really are amazing.
It's called Boilerplate?
Boilerplate.
I haven't heard of that. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, you should Google that. I met him in San Diego. I hope he's going to be there again, because unfortunately, I wasn't able to get a lot of stuff. I already had so much stuff at that point. I wasn't able to get and transport a lot more stuff. I always end up shipping home like 4 boxes from San Diego.
Right.
So I figured that I would see him elsewhere. I'm hoping he's going to be at San Diego this year because his stuff is amazing. I mean, in retrospect, when I checked out his website and everything else, fantastic stuff. And he's in the best painter / multimedia artist interior art.
Okay.
So good for him. And best coloring, I just wanted to point out one more. And it was Steve Hammaker who did Bone, The Great Cow Race, which was volume 1. So now what Scholastic is doing is they're reprinting Bone story arcs and coloring them.
One of my favorite books ever. I was so sad to see that book end.
Well, everything must end.
It's true. Jeff Smith has moved on to bigger and better
things.
Shazam, right?
Is that what he's doing?
He did Shazam for a bit, I
thought he was doing a Marvel book.
I think his first thing after Bone was Shazam, and I don't know what his current project is.
Okay.
So do you have anything else today, or is that because I have one thing else left for the news, but it's a little angry rant thing.
Okay.
So I don't know if you have something you want to.
No, rant. Okay. I just ranted about the Eisners, but it was more of a.
Yours was like a positive rant. This is like positive. This is
unless
like
unless you're a Young Avengers fan, in which case it was a negative
rant. Right. No, this is a. This is a.
If you are a Young Avengers fan, go get help.
Right. No. Mine's more of a I hate George Lucas and I hope he dies type of rant. Well, maybe not dies, but maybe gets mortally wounded and resuscitated at the last minute.
Somebody stabs him in that turkey neck.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what this is. Because for those of you that don't know and haven't heard, although I can't imagine you haven't, but Lucas has what he's saying. Given into the fans as far as DVD releases are concerned. He has said that beginning in September, I believe September 12th, which is a Tuesday, it's when all DVD releases come out, he's going to be releasing the original cuts of the original Star Wars trilogy.
Now, by original cuts, you mean?
No special editions.
No special editions.
The original theatrical release of the film.
Sound also? Because I'm trying to determine which set of bootlegs I can get rid of by George doing this, because I have three sets.
No, it's
now.
Probably going to be four sets. It's probably going to be the one that was THX remastered, that VHS set similar to that.
Like that.
Yeah, but there's going to be no Greedo, you know, shoots first.
Right.
No Jabba the Hutt. No crazy Wookiee yell swinging through the trees.
Right.
None of that shit. It's just what you saw in the theater, what we probably, most of us own, either on VHS or bootleg DVD at this point, for like $8 a disc, I think I paid.
Right.
And
I have all those editions, you know that.
Yeah, no, you've got like...
I have the original editions. Yeah, I have a THX mastered. I have special editions.
Yeah, you're sicker than I am. But needless to say, he's releasing these. Now, there's a couple things about this that really anger me. First, the fact that he's releasing them just infuriates me.
Right.
Not because I don't want them, because I do want them. I do want to own them, but I would have rather have owned them already. And at this point, I like being part of the bootleg club as far as the Star Wars movies
are concerned. But there's four versions of each of the three films now.
Yeah, I know that. I know. But they're different versions of different bootlegs, you know, different guys in different basements. I mean,
No. There's four distinct versions
of the first
three movies. There is the original cut,
right,
which is... The sound is not remastered. They haven't messed with anything.
Nothing.
That's one. Then there was the THX remasters,
right,
which is basically they just remastered the sound. And I don't know that they cleaned... Maybe they cleaned up some of the matting and stuff, like with the ships moving with square mat that followed everything. Maybe they fixed that in the THX ones. Then there was the special editions,
right,
which was the... what it was. It was the special editions.
Right.
The reissue that came out when they rented the theaters before episode one.
Right.
And now, then there was the ones that just came out, which were the remastered special edition.
Right.
That came out. What'd they come out?
Well, they came out before episode three.
Yeah. Those. That's another edition.
They came out like October, November last year, I think.
Yeah, whatever it was. Yeah. That edition is different because he went back in and changed stuff again to match up with episode three.
Right.
Four distinct editions of the film.
So this will be...
I don't know.
I don't know which one...
Or five.
I know it's not three or four.
It's got to be two.
So here's the thing. I'm almost pissed off that he's caved in, because if he was so steadfast about his belief that this was his true vision and this was the way the film was meant to be seen and this is how he wanted the film to be seen, then why cave at this point?
Money.
Exactly. Well, that's why it pisses me off. But not only that, apparently, and I don't know how true this is, but apparently they're not going to be released in a set. They're going to be released individually.
Mm-hmm.
Two disc sets,
mm-hmm.
$29.99 retail value.
Ooh.
Okay, so now what we've already paid potentially $60 or $70 for a special edition, we now have to pay $90, in theory, unless you get it on sale somewhere, for the original editions on DVD. Also, there's some rumor out there, and I don't know if it's been confirmed or not yet, so don't crucify me for it, but there's some rumor out there that the second disc in the two disc set might be the special edition.
Oh. Fantastic. Give me a cross and a hammer and nails.
So.
Someone's getting crucified.
If
that's the case.
It ain't me. It's Lucas.
Are you kidding?
That's what I read. I read it on one site, and I can't remember what site I read it on.
Which special edition?
Exactly. God only
special edition.
God only knows.
And then, of course,
the rumor is that there will be another audio commentary track, or there will be something else that sets it apart from the other editions. But is he retarded? Is he crazy? Because now he's also going to be releasing the movies in 3D starting in 2007.
But
so then he's going to release those on DVD also.
In
3D? Starting in 2007, George Lucas is going to go back and release all of them in theaters in 3D.
But at home won't matter.
He might release a 3D version of them at home, too.
How's he going to do that?
The same way they do everything with 3D. It comes with a couple pairs of stupid glasses for you to watch in your living room. Like, Shrek came out with, like, that in-between movie that was in 3D, and it came out like four pairs of glasses. Spy Kids 3D came with, like, four pairs of glasses packaged inside the DVD case. If he's stupid enough, if he's crazy enough to do it in the theaters, what makes you think he's not going to put them out in DVD? you know, the hardcore fans are going to buy it. I'm almost
so
ashamed.
That'll be what, sixth edition?
Potentially. I'm almost ashamed to say that come September, I'm going to buy these things. I know that I'm going to cave at some point in time and buy them. I'm ashamed of it, but I can't help it.
Really? Why? Are you a completist on Star Wars, Matt? Oh, what?
Anyway.
What was that? What was that
anyway,
silence?
So.
Let me say this.
The other thing no, is. Well, no, there's one more thing.
I'm putting this out there because I know you want to gloss it over. Matt Cipolletti. When I first met Matt Cipolletti, had one of the most impressive Star Wars action figure collections I've ever seen. As of the new stuff.
Right.
Not a lot of the old stuff, but the new, like, Power of the Force when it started in the early 90s, whenever right. it was.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, very inspirational collector. He was going at it. He was following it. He was collecting his stuff. It was the one thing he really focused on collecting. And then just, I don't care anymore. Well, what do you mean? I just don't care.
Okay. Now, see, he's kind of changing the story a bit. It wasn't that I didn't care anymore, and I could tell you exactly when it happened, too.
I know. Because, episode one.
No, it wasn't episode one. Oh, because through episode one, I had everything. I had all the figure assortments. I had all them little battle packs.
Midnight Madness.
I had all of the episode one stuff, and I followed it through to episode one. I went to episode two's Midnight Madness with the intention of continuing it with episode two, and it reached a point of just... It reached a point where I had to make a conscious decision on a Saturday afternoon whether or not I could afford to buy groceries or drop another $100 on new Star Wars figures that had come out. I mean, that's the decision I had to make.
And
it got to the point.
Groceries.
I picked my physical well-being over my Star Wars collection. I'm not ashamed to say it.
You fat fuck.
That's right. I'm not ashamed to say it. I wasn't being supported by anybody other than myself financially.
Why don't you just sell me the collection and let me fill in the gap?
Yeah, what are you going to pay me for it?
I got like $3.
Yeah, no.
I'll trade you that double-edged lightsaber.
Yeah, I'm sure it's worth a little bit more than that. Even at $1 a figure,
really?
It's worth more than that.
You want to do $1 a figure? Because I'll start paying you off.
No, I'm not selling them to you for $1 a figure. You're high.
Come on.
Anyway.
I'll give you like $2 for the ships.
Anyway, so... The last thing about this that aggravates me is that he's also making it a limited release. So he's also forcing you to make a decision in a 3-month period. Because come December 31st, 2006...
They're going to go back in the Disney vault?
They're going to go back in the Lucas vault. He's taking them out of print.
Yeah.
So they're going to be available for half of September, October, November, and December, and that's it.
Just in time for Christmas.
He's forcing you to buy it. He's not allowing you to sit on... making a decision. If you want it, you pretty much have to get it when it comes out.
Nice.
That's it. He's an ass. Mm. He's a greedy ass.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I'm done. Okay. Do you have something else?
No.
No?
Did I say I had something else?
I thought we had talked about something from Toy Fair that set you off this morning.
Oh, yeah.
We don't have to talk about it. I figured you'd want to get your angry rant in.
You know, it's just
it's like angry rant time.
Again, you know, I really want Toy Fair to go back to being a magazine about toys.
No.
I mean, again, we have... I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, it's getting better. I mean, really, it's down
to...
Oh, I think so. I mean, we still have the inside the whatever house where Zach and whoever the co-editor or assistant editor of the book is has their... little cartoon thing, which I think is kind of ridiculous. They still have the monthly rag, which is the kind of nonsensical news things that they somehow tie into toys, which is only a couple of pages this month, which is very, very good. Very good. They have the usual, the incoming section, which is really cool, which mm-hmm. is really what you buy the magazine for at this
right.
point.
Pretty pictures.
And then they get into some articles about some things that really have nothing to do with toys.
Right.
Like they have it's called Fensler Film. This guy Eric Fensler
mm-hmm.
Messed with the G.I. Joe PSAs or something.
Oh God, those have been surfing or floating around the internet for a while.
Yeah, but you know what? Nothing to do with toys.
You said G.I. Joe and Fantastic perked up.
All right, let's have it.
Have you seen the Fensler films?
No.
Oh, they're funny as hell.
They are. They really are really funny.
I haven't seen them.
You,
You should download.
They're the PSAs. They've just made them all crazy, right?
They've redubbed them, but they're hilarious. Really? They really are, yeah.
All right, I'll check them out. Yeah. But the point is that has nothing to do with toys.
No, right.
I'm not saying that there isn't a forum for that, but that forum is Wizard Magazine.
Yeah.
You know, in their TV section of Wizard Magazine or something. This is just an article about why this magazine, you know? And then we have, it talks about the man, it's called Action Cometh. It's actually a huge Superman Returns cover where they're showing the 1/6 scale Superman by DC Direct on the cover. Yet the article...
Not Bad Taco Superman?
No. No, but the article inside has nothing to do with the toys. First, they give you... casting call-outs. It's a little paragraph.
That used to be a about, Wizard article, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's like a little paragraph from each of the actors playing, I guess, the major roles in the movie. That's spread over a giant picture. It's two wasted pages, followed by a flow chart of Superman through the years. And that's Superman toys through the years. Superman through the years, radio, television, movies, and so on. And then it goes into an article, The Powers That Should Not Be. And it talks about all these powers
so,
that Superman shouldn't have from the comics where they show him using all these powers that he super hypnotism.
So what you're saying is this is Toy Fair issue, blah, 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 blah. The shit we couldn't fit in the Wizard movie issue.
It's kind of, not even whether it's in this Wizard movie issue or not. It certainly would have had, it certainly is more
appropriate
for that magazine. There's nothing about toys in this article. And that's the end of the article. Then it goes into, I mean, there's some stuff. They do Claiborne Moore interview, which is very nice. There's Twisted whatever theater.
So the stuff that they got better on, what really, the point is the stuff down, they got better on.
Yeah.
They fucked up or they screwed up with this other stuff.
They've now replaced the funny stuff, pages of the funny stuff with...
unrelated stuff.
Stuff that's unrelated to toys.
Right.
You know, and I maybe the... You know, I was going to say something I'd rather not.
No, so just let's just leave it.
Okay.
Let's just leave
it. That's all.
Why don't we take a little break?
Okay.
We'll regroup.
Okay.
We'll come back with some more good stuffs.
Hi, everyone. This is Mark.
No, stop it. Do it right.
This is Mr. Fantastic.
There you go.
Producer of Geek Stuff. Check out the home site at www.bigkevsgeekstuff.com where you can download each episode, check out image galleries, and drop us your comments each and every week. That's bigkevsgeekstuff.com. I fucking hate you guys.
I got my 12-sided die, and I'm ready to roll with a wizard and my goblin crew. My friends are coming over to my mom's basement, bringing Funyuns and the Mountain Dew. I got a big broadsword made out of cardboard, and that stereo's a pumping Zeppelin. It's that time of the night, we turn on the black light, let the dungeons and the dragons begin. It's D&D! With the legends of yore, it's D&D. Never kissed a lady before. Nope.
Woo! Yeah, I have it right here. You ready?
Uh-huh.
When a 30th century teenager discovers he is destined to become the time-traveling despot known as Kang the Conqueror, he travels back to the 21st century to enlist the aid of Kang's greatest adversaries, the Avengers. Young Kang arrives in the present only to learn that the Avengers have officially disbanded. With nowhere to turn, he uses his futuristic armor to break into Stark Industries, where he downloads the programming and data files of the decommissioned android Avenger, the Vision, into his CPU. Discovering a failsafe program in the Vision software designed to pinpoint the exact locations of the next wave of Avengers, young Kang puts together a new team of superpowered teens who, in an homage to the original Avengers, present themselves as would-be teen sidekicks of Captain America, Iron Man, Thor, and the Hulk. Patriot, Iron Lad, Asgardian, and Hulkling are dubbed the Young Avengers by the press. First of all, if it's the next wave of Avengers, why didn't they get Spider-Man, Wolverine, Sentry, and the new of the Avengers in that book? Why didn't they do that? Now, fuck this.
Again, the play-by-play. This is Kevin destroying the Toy Biz Legends box set. Blasphemous to you people.
Garbage!
Blasphemous to you people who like to keep the toys in their packaging. The box is just mangled. To you people who just hoped and wished to have one of these sets from the Walmart on Route 22 in New Jersey.
Not gonna get it on 22.
It is now destroyed. Trash. Wow.
But I digress.
Now, would that qualify as a berserker move?
I don't know.
Bringing us right to our next segment.
Maybe if I roll a 20-sided die, I would be able to
determine.
Roll against that table. And
right.
That's been a while. Is that what you do?
It's something along those lines.
No, not anymore.
Not anymore?
You're getting ahead of yourself. Fabulous.
We'll get there.
Mr. Fabulous.
So, in case you couldn't put it together already based on previous things discussed in this week's episode of Geek Stuff, Episode 8, The Treasure Hunters, this segment is all about D&D. I guess it's specifically about D&D and how D&D has progressed into modern-day role-playing games.
You mean Dungeons & Dragons?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Using a vernacular that may not be well known in the geek community.
Right. They might think it's dildos and dykes or something else.
Right.
No, it's too...
No, I'm going to let it go.
So Dungeons and Dragons is the topic of this segment.
Oh.
Where did it all start, Kevin?
It's back in a log cabin in Illinois.
No, that was Lincoln.
I don't know. Do you have official things? Because I'm going to say it started in 1970. And
yeah, it was right around there. It was 74?
No.
Yeah, I think it was
6
74.
Or 7. It's got to be.
76
or 77. It's got to be.
Well, it was
fantastic. Anything?
Here you go. Google. Dungeons and Dragons. The original Dungeons and Dragons, designed by Gary Gygax, was published in 1974, January of 1974.
Really?
By Gygax's company, then called Tactical Studio Studies Rules, now dubbed TSR.
Not anymore.
Well, now it's Wizards of the Coast.
Right.
But yeah, original D&D, 1974, Gary Gygax. And it was actually based off another game that he had been working on, which was some sort of war strategy game called Chainmail.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Hmm. So this was actually the brainchild of Gary Gygax's previous game. Most of us played it as a kid in some capacity.
Should I get my books out?
Do we
have enough visual?
Oh, yeah, okay. Sure.
All right.
What are they up to now? 3.5, I think it is?
I have no idea.
I think the most...
I stopped so long ago, I can't even... Hey, fantastic. Anything?
3.5 is the most recent.
Yeah, what are all those books that you have right there?
Those aren't D&D books.
Some of them.
A Forgotten Realms campaign setting book right under there? Oh. At least edition 3, third edition.
I do?
Oh, I think he called you out.
I think so.
I think you do.
But let's be clear about something. That's not a rule book. That's a campaign setting book.
True that.
So, I mean, as far as rules go, maybe version 2 or...
Well, 3.5 is the newest edition. 3.0 was released, I guess it was probably about 2-3 years ago now.
And then they were like, wait a minute.
And they did some real minor revisions to make it 3.5. 3.0, the huge thing between 3.0, it went from the old D&D FACO system...
Oh,
who hit
right.
armor class 0
right.
to a D20 system, kind of like GURPS.
Right.
So
what's GURPS?
Generic
Universal
Role-Playing system, something along those lines. Right. Yeah. So really, we want to talk about the focus of how it's evolved.
So in 1974, mm-hmm. it was a game played with several different kind of dice.
Polyhedron.
Yes, you created a character that you wrote down.
Right.
And this is basic role-playing stuff. D&D is the godfather, grandfather of all of this.
Right. A lot of people hear D&D, and I don't think they fully understand what it means. People who play World of Warcraft online and play...
I'll tell you this much. I don't mean to interrupt
Guild
you, but...
Wars and EverQuest. They don't right. realize that what they're playing is the great-great-grandchild of...
I never would have found Satan if it wasn't for D&D.
I would have never killed my parents with a crossbow. So,
and I so would have that. Never. I personally would never have drank goat's blood,
right?
If I hadn't found D&D,
right?
And who knew?
Who knew? My rare collection of dragon scales never would have been a thought. Wasn't for D&D.
That was something that actually happened to me when I was. Not that I drank blood or, but
sure you didn't.
When I was younger, I had, it's funny how you say, you know, people really didn't know what D&D was, but right. I was riding my bike around. I must've been in the fifth grade. Okay. Kid who was a year older than me. I ran into him in the street and he said to me, oh, I just played this most awesome game. And he went on to describe, you know, fighting dragons and arrows and elves and knights and all these things. And not one time did I ask him, was this a video game? Was this a book? Was this a board game? What is this? And I didn't ask him. And then eventually I said, you know, tell me more about it. And it's just let's pretend with rules.
That's
yeah.
it.
So
that's what, yeah, that's where I was going. It's basically a group of people that sit around mm-hmm. and pretend without actually getting up. And, well, I mean, most of them, without actually, that's LARPing, another whole topic.
Right.
Without actually getting up, it's basically people who are going to sit around and they're going to pretend to. They're going to play these characters, and there will be one person, the dungeon master, who will move them
right
throughout the dungeon master's story.
I think a lot of people are confused by the term role playing, although it seems simple enough to me. But I think a lot of people don't fully understand what it is. Maybe a better term would be a storytelling game, because that's really what you're doing. You're creating the characters of the story, and you're moving them through. Different plot sequences as created by yourself and the person running the campaign.
You know what I thought?
What?
I started playing D&D when I was 9,
okay.
by the way. When I first saw the word role-playing written out,
mm-hmm.
right, it's R-O-L-E playing.
Right.
And I thought that in order for you to put these two words together, that you had to change the second L to an E. And that it was actually role-playing, like R-O-L-L, because you roll the dice.
Right.
And I thought that was the some sort of rule, spelling rule, or one of those, what are they, phonics,
right,
something,
right.
one of those crazy rules
right.
that you had to change the L to an E in order to make the word.
Yeah, it's like
word.
I before E except after
yeah,
C,
yeah, yeah,
and
L before E when playing D&D is
L for E, yeah. E for L, and yeah, I thought it was one of those. And,
although that would kind of have, at least it would have made sense, though. There was logic to that,
right.
to that thought.
Some kind of gay logic, yeah. Right. But and what I'll tell you, it was, as Mr. Fantastic described, when you first hear of something like this, mm-hmm. it is absolutely amazing. I'll never forget my first experience playing. I'll never, ever forget. I played, basically, it was me and one other, and one DM guy. And I was on vacation somewhere. I think my aunt and uncle had rented a cabin or something somewhere where we were amongst other cabins. So, you know, people interacted and so forth. And this one kid was really into D&D. He was a couple years older than me. And...
they always are.
Got me alone and whipped out his D&D books. And, you know, I was like, what is this? And he taught me how to play. And I, to be honest with you, I'd like to say I never stopped playing, but I haven't played in a while now. But the point is you never forget your first experience playing this sort of game. I mean, it's totally immersive and it's all in your head.
Right.
You know, the only thing you're doing with dice is the dice is a random event generator or the unknown. It's the X factor, if you will, in a role-playing game. Because when you need to know whether something happens, whether you're accomplish something or not, then you have a certain chance of doing it, and that's where the dice comes into play.
Right.
So you never forget. You never forget creating a character. You never forget building him from the ground up, sure, and how he looks to you in his head, in your head. And it's really fantastic. I think it's been, kind of unfortunately lambasted and kind of pigeonholed into a certain type of person. Geeks play this game, and what's unfortunate about that is D&D and other role-playing games too. I mean, I'm not, you know, we're focusing on D&D, but really D&D as the father of this whole thing.
Right.
It encourages reading. It encourages creativity.
Mm-hmm.
It encourages just research,
organization,
learning,
understanding of rules and systems.
Sure.
And
oh, and God knows the rules were complex in the early days.
Team play, getting along with others. I mean, it has so many good qualities that, and I think that they are by and large, they are overlooked.
Mm-hmm.
For the whole geek aspect of it, that, you know, everybody sits with Mountain Dew and Funyuns in their friend Joey's basement, and they play Led Zeppelin records or the soundtrack to some dragon movie, and they,
which
and
they does happen,
mystical. I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm just saying that this is that is the exception rather than the rule, because I never sat in a basement. I never ate a Funyun,
right,
or drank Mountain Dew.
Oh, I did the Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew and pizza. That was our. It kept us up all night. We played like 8-hour sessions.
Yeah, and I never did any of the cliche things associated with D&D. In fact, the guys I played with really consistently and really when I first really started getting into it was when I was in middle school.
Well, back in the day, you know, back when I was younger, when I really first started playing, my best friends at that point in my life were the people that I played the game with. I played in a campaign that lasted like almost 8 or 9 years. I mean, I started playing when I was like 8 or 9 years old. I think I played in my first campaign, and I was the youngest one in the group. And I didn't stop playing that until I got into college, and it was no longer convenient for me to sit on game sessions and stuff anymore. And from there, I went into other games, and I played in a couple of other small campaigns. But I mean, you know, that was...
We played.
We did play. We played a couple games. But it really does... It does have an influence on your life.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point there, too, and it's almost something that's unfortunate about it, that once you do play it, and you don't have to be a complete geek to play it, mm-hmm, I have gotten some of my other friends to dabble, you know, once or twice in it, and they all really enjoy it. It's just that it's almost so much fun that you kind of want to do it so much that it's disappointing that you can't, because you have to go to work and get up in the morning and things like that. That it's just, you know, playing out those fantasies with little rules, you know, a little bit of rules sprinkled in there, and to see people who are normally completely straight-laced, you know, let loose every once in a while. It's hella fun.
It is.
Do you see that? Isn't it cute? Isn't it cute when Mr. Fantastic, like, sticks a foot out of his geek closet? He's still way in there. But every now and again, he's just like, it's like he's sticking his foot in the water to see how warm it is. I'm just going to stick my foot in.
Well, but, you know, I really think an important part of this conversation is that there's such a stigmata tie to it, and there are more people out there.
Whoa, slow down. Not stigmata.
Bleeding hands.
There's not a stigmata attached.
Stigma. Right. There's such a stigma attached with it. I think there are probably more people who are D&D fans and don't realize that they're D&D fans, or are at least fans of what D&D represents and the kind of game that it is.
Yeah, I think you'll see that the largest population of people who really understand it now are the people who are creating the current video games, and not only massively multiplayer online role-playing games in the vein of D&D, but all video games in general.
Sure.
I mean, it's just rules applied, and that's the manifestation of those rules, you know.
Sure.
And that was the next logical step.
Right.
For role-playing games was for them to go to computers,
mm-hmm,
and video games. And although I'll have to say that the closest thing to a video game in the early days, I guess, would have to be like Zork.
I would say so, probably. What was there anything before Zork that was like that? I don't think so.
And Zork was basically a text game. Yeah. You know, it said, you see this, what do you do? And you put in a response, and if your response was one of the responses they programmed for, then you got a response back.
Yeah, it was one player, and pretty much the computer or the software acted as the storyteller, acted as the DM. And, you know, you would walk into a room, and it would say, all right, you're in the room of a house, and there's a room off to the back corner, and you see some furniture, and you see a box, and yada, 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 and you had to react to...
Right.
To what it was telling you was in that room.
Right. That kind of graduated from there, though. It kind of, we went through that unfortunate period in the, I guess, the mid-80s, the early to mid-80s, where they couldn't really get the whole create a character in the video games kind of thing. So you were stuck playing. Although, I mean, you had some games that were kind of adventurous. It never really felt like D&D. It never really felt like that level of intensity, that level of sort of commitment of the brain.
Well, the first game that I remember playing after Zork that kind of reminded me of this when I was younger was King's Quest. But again, with King's Quest, there was no character customization. It was really kind of just a fantasy-based game where you did have the opportunities to do things. The difference between King's Quest and Zork was that you actually were seeing things. So you saw a boulder on the screen, and you could try to move the boulder. You know, you did have some interactivity, but there was no customization to your actual character.
This is also a good point you bring up, too, though, because both of the games that you mentioned so far, although both role-playing games in a certain sense, you're playing a role, they're more in the adventure vein in that you're, you know, exploring and learning and trying to put things together to make things work.
Right.
But there was that second component that kind of came in, which was the, you know, the intense rules and numbers and strategy and things like that, that they didn't have, that later games like Ultima and Wizardry and later the first one, big one for me, was Dragon Warrior on the Nintendo Dragon Quest as it's known in Japan and now on PlayStation. And that's really where those two things, you know, they came together and kind of led into the role-playing games that we now know.
But even with Dragon Quest or Dragon Warrior, whatever you want to coin it, which I played, I loved it. I thought it was great. But there was no real character customization there. So they added the rule. They added the rule component in, but the creative aspect of designing your old player still wasn't there yet.
Right.
The creativity involved in making a unique character. Unique in this, in this entire game system was not there. I think by and large until very recently.
Right, and when we say create a character, it can be really in depth if you want it to be. I mean, you can decide on body types, you know, right to hair type. Hair color.
I mean, getting to be that you know spacing of the eyes and everything else.
But you can choose like deities, and then there are, you know, different races and classes. I mean, it really got very specific down to the minute, you know, the most minute detail.
Right.
What was the first real game? It had to have been an online computer game. I'm thinking. What was the first real one where you had character customization? Ultima didn't have that, right?
No, I mean, I'm sure that there were a lot of like custom MUDs and floating around there that you could, you know, customize your character, and they probably adhered to D&D style rules.
Right. There
were
a couple MUDs
where you could do that.
Shadow MUD.
I don't know. I don't really know where like that turning point was. I mean, I can think of more recent games that are really strong in that. I can think of Wizardry games where, you know, you could pick your race and every stat imaginable or roll for every stat imaginable.
Well, The most obvious one would be EverQuest, I would think, right? Where you really had some sort of control over that type of stuff. But what was the bridge? Was there a bridge? Was there something that was just a little less than EverQuest?
There probably
was,
but they're just not memorable.
Right.
I mean, once you get to something like an EverQuest or Star Wars Galaxies, God rest its soul.
Right.
You know, once you get into that level, and even now, some of the things that you're seeing with regards to the character customization in even platform games, like I just got, Fantastic and I were just talking about, I got Fight Night 3, which is a boxing game for the Xbox 360, where you can customize, you can create a fighter and customize, you know, every little detail of his physical appearance, as well as, you know, name, where he comes from. And I mean, there's options there. Again, not maybe as in depth, but they're getting to the point where you need to do all these things. Star Wars Galaxies, for example, amongst the races, when it was good, when you could pick races and things and careers and so on and so on, and had all those infinite. I mean, how long did you spend creating your character?
Oh, forgot it. First time I played, forgot about it.
And but let's talk about. Hold on 1 second. Let's talk about what's the superhero game?
Oh, City of Heroes.
City of Heroes is a shitty game, but is a fantastic character generator, because it literally, you can literally spend like 35 hours just creating your character, because there are that many variables physically, from a characterization point of view. And then the element that was missing, the creativity, they give you those options in games like Star Wars and City of Heroes, where you get to write the backstory. Right. Of your character and where they come from and so on and so forth, and how Super Blow got to be Super Blow in City of Heroes, for example. Right. Fantastic.
Do you have something?
Well, you kind of identify something that I think is what you kind of identify something that I think could be a problem for people trying to get into these games, and maybe something that keeps them out of it, is that some of them are so complex that it requires, in order for you to be your best, to really pay attention and to really exploit every little rule and every little building block.
You see what he's doing right now? What he's doing unconsciously is I'm going to go over there. I'm going to smack him in the mouth. He is defending the reasoning behind them flipping Star Wars Galaxies.
Right. But what I want to say is, you know, those things, especially with Galaxies, and Galaxies would be the online game that I had the most experience with. I tinkered with EverQuest, and I couldn't fully get into it. I tinkered with the Dark Age of Camelot, and I couldn't fully get into it. Galaxies was the first time I really, really dedicated time to playing this type of game.
It was amazing.
You know, a lot of those little tweaks, a lot of those little customization tweaks, at least with Galaxies, you didn't have to set off right away. If you wanted to kind of just do a quick character generation, you really could. And then with the way the game ran, they let you change almost everything. I mean, they had people in the game whose sole profession was to change the way you look. If you started the game and you were like, all right, brown hair, brown eyes, because it's the quickest, right? And then at some point in the game, you're like, you know what, brown hair, I look like every other mook running around Moena on Naboo. I want blonde, spiky hair and bright purple eyes.
And a big, fat belly.
Yeah, you can go to a guy who was or a girl who was an image designer, and for a small fee in-game, they could change your complete physical appearance. Everything about you, it's like plastic surgery in the game.
Yeah, I mean, it's that level of detail that made Galaxies, I think, a very remarkable game. And all the more tragic that they decided, like Mr. Fantastic is saying, that some people weren't getting into it because that level of intensity, and moreover also that the gameplay was a bit too complex to accomplish goals. You had to do grinding and things of that nature. Grinding, which is sort of mundane tasks that you do in massive online games in order to gain experience, to gain new skills, and so on and so forth. Because of that thinking, we lost Star Wars Galaxies.
Right.
I think that it probably was too complex. However, I don't think that they should have changed it. Terrible timing, terrible business decision. Even when you have that, you know, user base going for you, it was a big risk that they took, and it failed.
It was almost 1.5 million people. This is unofficial numbers, but from what I heard, and I believe me, when Galaxies was going to flip, I went berserk. I talked to everybody at Lucasfilm that I know. I talked to everyone at LucasArts that I know, including the president and the person responsible ultimately for making this decision, and begged him not to do this. Because you had, again, I'm going to say, 1.5 million subscribers or accounts. So you could have people with multiple, a lot of people have multiple accounts. You had 1.5 million accounts, people playing this game. 1.5 million people playing this game. and who had been playing it for almost, what, 3 years at that point?
Probably.
Something like that, who had gone through all the crap. There was a lot of crap to go through. They did a lot of structure changes and things within the game that a lot of people didn't like, but the overall structure of the game was still the same, and it was still a lot of fun. And even though you may not like the combat upgrade when it happened, you got over it because, all right, it's a little thing. You got to do another little.
Because when all is said and done, it was still the same game.
Right. And what they did was they succumbed, apparently, to the pressure of people who want to play platform games, console games on their computers. That's what they did. They turned Star Wars Galaxies into a platform console game. And you have what used to be almost innumerable, was it 40 odd professions when you break
probably,
it down?
Yeah.
Is it was let's say 40 for a round number. Let's just say 40 professions.
And what did it go to? Nine?
Six.
Yeah.
Or and, nine or whatever it is.
And that was one of the best features of Galaxies. I don't know a lot about EverQuest because, like I said, I didn't give it a huge chance. But even the little bit that I knew and the little experience I had even with Dark Age of Camelot, Galaxies was really the first game that I saw that I kind of looked into that really had the ability where if you almost never, ever wanted to engage in a combat-oriented character, you didn't have to.
Exactly.
You did not have to pick up a pistol, a sword, a pair of brass knuckles, a lightsaber. If you didn't want to, you never, almost never had to engage in combat. A little bit in the beginning to kind of get a money flow situation going, but for the most part.
Do you remember Manny?
Manny never fought.
Manny, all he did was mine. That's all he did was mine stuff and sell what he mined. Now, that may not be fun for you, but for this guy, it was fun. He would survey. He had a notebook where he would survey the planets and find out where all the good ore stuff was. And he had this spreadsheet and when it would flip. And it was great. I mean, that level of, again, may not be fun for you, but it was fun for that guy.
Right. And there were other guys like him. I mean, he was not in a small group. There were plenty of people that did just that.
And again, let's try to refocus onto topic. That level of intimacy and that level of, you can play the game you want to play is an element that started with Dungeons & Dragons and role-playing games.
Now, to bring it back to Dungeons & Dragons, as great as those games are or can be, there still is not as much freedom with those games as you have with Dungeons & Dragons. And I think because of that, you're starting to see, over the last year or so, I would say, you're starting to see a small resurgence in tabletop role-playing games. People are picking up the books. The books are still coming out. There's still new material being published all the time. There are character generators online. I mean,
when are we playing?
I don't know. Let's roll up some characters. I got some die. Let's keep a couple handy.
Some die.
Somewhere. No, not some guy. Some die.
But I'm serious. When are we playing?
We got to get a campaign going. But there is freedoms that you have that you don't have in those online games. Because even those online games, even with the minutest details that you have and with the 40-some-odd professions, you are still confined to a certain degree of what the developers are really kind of said. I mean, I've played in some D&D campaigns where no matter how hard the guy running the game tried, we have just run amok. No matter how hard he tried to get us to not kill the innocent bartender and start some sort of civil war in a small city, yeah, we killed them.
No matter how much the D&D, no matter how much the Dungeon Master said killing that puppy would be a bad idea.
Yeah, he killed that puppy.
That's
no matter how many times I got hit with a 20-sided die in the head for making a bad decision, we still made the bad decisions.
No matter how many times you shot the magic missile into the tree or, what was that spell? Armor. You armored a tree.
I did.
No matter how many times that you're right, though, there is still that limitation.
No matter how many times the DM told you not to attack a gazebo because it's just a gazebo.
Right.
You still burnt it to the ground.
No matter. But there is obviously with anything that's taking place outside of your head,
right,
there are limitations.
Sure.
So it's the limitations of the computer.
Sure.
It's limitations of the program, mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. And it's they're getting so wide and broad. Even platform games like or console games like what's that one?
And you, mm-hmm. Grand Theft Auto.
That's the one. Thank you. Even with console games like Grand Theft Auto, you don't have to play the storyline of Grand Theft Auto. You can run around and do whatever you want. Again, a little bit more freedom coming, a little bit more open play coming.
You won't win the game, but you'll have fun. I think that's right. the key to it, too.
But what, right. What is winning the game?
Yeah, some people just want to spend 2 hours, you know.
You don't win D&D.
Getting hookers into a back of a van, taking right. their money, then getting out and clubbing them and taking
it back.
Oh, that's
what I do. You know what I do? I get them in the car and then do that, and then I start driving before they get out of the car so they can't get out of the car. And then what I do is I head right for the water, and I do that tumble roll out of the car.
No, he means what do you do in the video game? But Matt brings up a good point before, too, about...
Is that humor?
That was pretty funny.
I'm totally lost.
No, I had a good point. I want to know what my good point was. I don't have them often.
I totally forget what he's...
Good. I ruined it. Good.
You're a bastard.
Good, Mr. Funny.
Well, really what Cricket. What I wanted to bring it back to is that there is a resurgence. There is a resurgence in these tabletop games.
Right.
And I also... want to say, and I know it's not our focus, but D&D is not even by far the only game out there.
No.
I mean, there are tons and tons of games out there. White Wolf has a whole slew of game systems out there. That would be Vampire, Werewolf, Mage, Changeling.
They're all on their second editions also.
Actually, they relaunched the whole... It's not just second editions with them. They've kind of relaunched the game.
Yeah.
Changed... The mechanics are still the same, but they relaunched the stories and the right. background history and stuff like that. And, you know, GURPS has a ton of games out there. And
GURPS is probably the best one out there as far as spreading a wide net, so to speak.
Right.
It's generic universal role-playing system. It's by Steve Jackson Games. It's basically a role-playing system, a generic role-playing system where you can then apply it to anything. You can create your whole own universe to play in, or you could buy one of the, gotta be 60 or 70 specific rule books for specific things. Don't say it,
because
I'm going to get there. I'm going to get there, so don't say it. They have GURPS Old West.
Right.
So you can play Cowboys and Indians or whatever. They have GURPS Vampire, GURPS Werewolf, GURPS...
Swashbuckler.
They have GURPS Swashbuckler. They have GURPS... What was that other one I was just thinking of? GURPS... Supers, so like a superhero one. I don't know if it's called. Oh yeah, it is Supers. I think it's GURPS right. Supers. They have GURPS Bunnies and Burrows,
hate you.
Which is kind of you play rabbits.
Watership Down the RPG.
It's like a Watership Down RPG. What could be better than that? And other things too. They have GURPS Scarlet Pimpernel. I think they have GURPS.
You could play GURPS Geek Stuff. Someone could play
wow.
Big Kevin.
Oh, wow. Let's do that.
Someone could play Mr. Fantastic.
I want to play Mr. Fantastic. What are his stats?
I don't know. The wisdom and intelligence have to be pretty high. But
wisdom?
But
wisdom?
But charisma.
I'll give you intelligence.
He meant street smarts.
Yeah.
That's not wisdom.
His dexterity is kind of low.
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, as far as a role-playing system goes, that's going to be your widest net
right.
because whatever game you want to create, if it isn't out there, you could apply it to GURPS rules and you can play it, period.
Sure.
Like you said, you could play geek stuff. You could play anything,
mm-hmm.
Which is really fantastic. Yes?
Which is where the circle is complete now that D&D has... in a sense, given birth to all these video games that we talked about. The video games and software in general and the computer world in general has kind of contributed back with the whole kind of open license that Wizard has going with the D20 license mm-hmm. and saying, okay, all you third parties out there who were, you know, making and selling things previously
now we're going to actually promote that and say, you use the rules and you use our little icons and be part of the D&D world and make your own stuff and, you know, promote that growth in the community, a very open source, very open-minded approach to something very old.
It is very open, because for the first time the other day, I saw a D20 book, and I don't know who puts it out or who prints it, but if you were to look at it quickly and thumb through it, it would look like a D&D rule book. It's erotic role playing. It's like, it's got like pregnancy scores and like you roll for random pregnancy and like STDs and like sexual prowess. It's like
you bought it, didn't you?
No, I did not buy it.
Did, you liar.
I
we're not playing that one.
No, I saw it actually saw it online somewhere.
Sure, but you did.
Anyway,
online.
I did.
Your favorite websites?
Yeah, that's it. You know me.
Kit Kat Club. Beautiful girls.
You know what? I think we probably have covered all of role playing, with maybe one exception: LARPing. We didn't get into LARPing.
No, we're not
going
to discuss that.
We'll leave. Because
those guys are just creeps. We'll leave that for another time.
Padded PVC.
Yeah, it's.
We'll leave that alone.
I think what we can conclude here is that 1974 gave birth to role playing, obviously, and role playing in turn has expanded out in many different directions. Mm-hmm. It expanded into the text computer genre. It expanded into the, it affected, I guess, it affected is probably the right word. It affected the computer genre. It affected video games, which then in turn, as Mr. Fantastic said, affected role-playing games back. So it's kind of like Mr. Fantastic said, it's cyclical.
Yeah, it also gave birth to, because I don't want to leave anybody out because people get angry and agitated, it also gave birth to miniature gaming to a certain degree. I mean, a lot of miniature games are based on similar types of campaigns and ideas, and they're pretty open and free based, and they're pretty much role-playing games, but
it's kind of the miniatures that you wanted to use.
Yeah.
Or that you were encouraged to use when you first started playing D&D.
Right, but
spacing and things, right, for people that couldn't just draw on a little piece of paper.
The difference being, in a miniatures campaign, you normally don't play a single character. You normally play
this is where it came from.
That's what I mean. That's probably the other group that D&D gave birth to. So not to leave anybody out.
Right.
I don't want to be a hater anymore.
Really?
Nah. Giving up on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly. So I think that's it. I think that probably wraps up our D&D segment.
I'm going to have fun editing that one.
Are you?
What are we at, like 2.5 hours? Fantastic.
Hour and a half.
We could do parts one and two again.
Oh, good God.
So I think that probably wraps up our D&D segment. I think we're going to take another short break now. We're going to come back. We're going to wrap things up. And we're not going to wrap things up, are we?
We have another whole topic.
Oh damn. People want
what?
I've been really trying, baby.
Hey there, you sexy geek. Don't miss a single episode of Geek Stuff. Available every Monday at BigKevsGeekStuff.com. You know you want it.
Let's get it on.
Yeah, and the Hulkling has like 8 earrings.
Ew.
Because he's a punk kid. He's a tough punk kid.
Bleeding Edge Hulkling.
Stupid ass. I hate this garbage.
I looked at that during the break. I know what that is now.
What?
That's the metrosexual version of the Avengers.
Yeah, that's what it is. No, it isn't. It's the homosexual version of the Avengers. They're all gay.
Ew.
So,
news segment.
No, we did the news already.
Wrap up of the news segment.
Go ahead.
Okay. We hit upon the Stanley reality show that's going to be airing on the Sci-Fi Channel with its awful tagline, "Turning Your Spandex." And we also talked about George Lucas being a greedy prick and re-releasing the Star Wars movies yet again, making it a sixth or seventh version, whatever the hell it is.
Isn't it six?
On DVD. Look for it September 12th.
Fifth?
three two-disc sets, $30 a piece.
Six would be 3D.
Yes, so fifth.
Right, because there's four out now, we decided.
Right.
We also touched on the Highlander comic.
Right.
And that there would be one, and that it seems like it's probably not a great idea. But Mike Oeming attached means it may be worth checking out on some level. I don't know exactly
maybe
what. We also talked about some of my picks and the Eisner Awards in general, which is the comic book sort of Oscars awards, which will be happening in July at San Diego Comic-Con, where I will be present.
Right.
And we also talked about, did we talk about Marvel movies?
Yeah, we talked about.
Did we for like 6 seconds? Oh, we talked about Wizards mega movie issue. You
right
should check that out. We also talked about where it seemed like Toy Fair might be turning a corner on the goofy sort of stuff that they usually do. They've now replaced it with articles that don't have to do with toys.
Right.
So it's just, it's one thing or another thing. Why they can't just do a book about toys, I don't understand. They did it for a long time successfully, I thought. And I think that's it.
Yep. Then we move directly into the Circle of Life for D&D, which would be, I guess it's starting out as a complex tabletop role-playing game, moving into basic video games and adventure games, giving birth to the massive multiplayer online role-playing games that we love, World of Warcraft, Star Wars Galaxies, EverQuest, stuff like that. And
Star Wars Galaxies.
Well, which
rest
is now
in
dead.
Peace.
And coming back to a resurgence in the tabletop role-playing game and what it represents and the freedom that it allows.
And really, as Mr. Fantastic said, which I think is a great point, which is why I'm actually going to reiterate it for a third time,
right,
is that the cyclical nature of this whole thing, as Mr. Fantastic said, those ideas and adaptations for massive online games are now in turn affecting the business and the overall gaming of tabletop role-playing games.
Right. And I think that wraps us up for this week. So come back again, and we'll figure out what we have in store for episode 9.
And we'll talk more about why the Young Avengers is the worst concept ever in the history of comic books.
Queer Eye for the Straight Superhero.
This is just awful. This is terrible. I just don't.
Just let it go.
I can't.
Just let it go.
It infuriates me so. I hate. Why?
Are you upset because the Patriot's belt clashes with his shield?
And on that note, we cue the music.
I've got Dungeon Master's Guide. I've got 12-sided die.